Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So before we start the show today, I just want you all to know there are spoilers for Wolfenstein the New Colossus, just the intro, but there are spoilers and a pretty big content warning for all kinds of Nazi behavior that is not great. So that's just a start out. Wolfenstein 2 the New Colossus is not fucking around. The intro to the game establishes the tone for a game that goes in hard against Nazis and any fascist, racist, ignorant attitudes that paved the way for the movement in the first place. We have flashbacks to protagonist BJ Blazkowicz's troubled childhood with his Jewish mother and deeply racist, anti-Semitic, homophobic, and abusive father. We see Frau Engel, she of the New Order fame, execute a beloved character in front of our eyes while berating her own daughter, an officer, for being fat and queer. And then we take command of a wheelchair-bound BJ, never lets a disability keep him from kicking Nazi ass really hard. It is a hell of a statement. And I am Danielle Riendo, and this is Waypoint Radio, episode 107. It's Friday, 10/27/2017, and I am, of course, joined by Austin Walker.
I think it's 108 or 106. Fridays are evens.
No.
Mondays are odds.
You know what? Then it's probably 108, right?
It could be.
Is it 106? I'm sorry.
It might be 106. I'm Austin Walker. That's true.
But he's Austin Walker. You know, I was trying to go in hard on that intro, and then I threw off the number. I'm sorry. I'm not very precise.
108.
It's 108.
108.
It's 108. Do we want to do this all again?
Document. No.
Do we want to do this again? No.
This is endearing.
This is endearing. Okay.
You should change it to 109, really, or 110. I'm not sure if updating it to today's podcast helps anyone.
The hope is I'll leave it at today's, and when Danielle updates us for next Friday's show, it'll go to 110.
Okay.
Yeah. And we'll try that.
I've edited this.
Now it's better, and I'm also joined, of course, by Mr. Patrick Klepek.
I mean,
what's up? What's wrong, Patrick?
You okay, Patrick?
No, I'm the opposite of okay. At 3 a.m. last night, my dog, many nights, just, you know, said, I gotta go to the bathroom. She's an older lady, and her bladder just, you know, doesn't work the way it used to, and she doesn't always make it all the way through the night, but she's kind enough to get up and pace around until one of us gets up and lets her out, and so I did, and I let her out back. And she went and did her business. It was a real long urination. She clearly had a lot backed up, and I felt bad. And I was like, all right, well, sure. You're taken care of. She, like clockwork. She goes out. I sit in my office. She comes back in. And this time, instead, she darted off. And there are three things that can happen in that scenario. In order of awful things that can happen out in the suburbs where I am, one, it can be a coyote, which does happen. They do come out through. So there's a lot of forest preserves, nature preserves near where we're at. So that would be bad. My dog would lose a fight with a coyote. That would go poorly. So that's first thing in your head is fuck, is that one of those coyotes that sometimes shows up?
Right.
Three, we'll skip two. Because two is what happened. Three, is a squirrel. Go chase the squirrel. I don't know what the squirrel's doing out at 3 a.m, but I don't know. And then two is a skunk. And the dog, the skunk is problematic for a lot of reasons, because if you go after the skunk, you put yourself potentially in harm's way.
Absolutely. You have to give the skunk a wide berth.
I'll go fight that coyote. I'll go kick a coyote. I'm
have
ready
you
to.
Kicked a coyote?
No, but I'm saying I would.
If it threatened your dog.
Yeah, if it threatened my dog, or if it had my dog in its mouth, I'm gonna go kick that coyote. It's on. Squirrel, squirrel, you better run. That's outside its nature. You're on your own. I don't think my dog can catch you. It's pretty slow, but, you know, that's between you and that's just nature doing its thing. And two is nature doing its thing as well, but I don't want to get involved in nature doing its thing. So I saw the dog run I ran after to try and get a sense, like, I just recently, as of this morning, purchased some floodlights to install in my backyard, which I do not have, and immediately saw my dog, like, turn the other way and run. I was like, fuck, it's number two. It's number two.
Oh, no.
And all I could hope was that the skunk had scared my dog, you know, like, kind of, like hissed at it, which sometimes the skunks will do prior to actually spraying, and hope that we both got away. Got into the house, immediately my dog starts, like clearly something is, like, bothering its mouth. It's, like, trying to puke, and it's causing issues, and all of a sudden I just, like, it hits me like a fucking pile of bricks. It's just, like, the stench, like, the smell. My dog goes chasing up the stairs, bursting into our bedroom, jumping onto the bed, and quickly my wife is like, what the fuck is going on? I was like, ah, we got hit by a skunk! And, like, I didn't realize, I panicked, I should have grabbed the dog, not allowed it to go on the bed, because then quickly the skunk spray infected, like, all of our bedding. I discovered this morning that it was, like, on the mattress, so I'm, like, rubbing stuff on the mattress, hoping that, like, this is not turning into, like, a several thousand dollar error. It's like my wife is grabbing the dog, locking it in the shower, looking up the concoction you're supposed to use to clean them, which is not tomato juice. I feel like maybe we've gone over this in the past on a previous podcast. Tomato juice is a myth. The only thing that tomato juice does is overpower the smell of...
So you smell like tomato instead of smelling like skunk.
Which is preferable.
That's preferable. Tomato smells okay.
It is so... So I've had a skunk interaction with my dog before, but we ran away.
A skunk interaction.
There's a scale of skunk interactions. And that one, we got sprayed, but it wasn't really that bad. And I thought it was bad, but I now know it wasn't bad. Oh. Because in this case, like... I am borderline, like, vomiting all over my house. Like, it is indescribable and you can't get the smell away. Like, the moment you've, like, I've recovered. Like, no, it's just, like, in your, like, I think what happened to me was that I didn't get sprayed because I didn't go anywhere near the skunk. But I was just, like, within, like, the area of effect spell that the skunk cast. And I just breathed it in. Like, so what ended up happening to me was just, like, my mouth was just full of the skunk stuff. And it's bad. God. It is hard to impress upon people how bad it is, and unless you've gone through it, don't go through it. Don't do it.
Don't go out of your way. You don't think?
No. If there was a way to briefly experience it and then turn it off, I would encourage. Like, there's a lot of things in life that are bad that if I could experience them for, like, 5 seconds, like, and then just, like, back off, I would. But it is not worth experiencing until we've invented the technology to experience. Maybe VR with smell-o-vision can somehow
total
get us to
Total recall.
Place.
You know, we need a total recall machine, I think.
It's bad.
Really,
Now I don't know if, like, when I smell the skunk stuff, is that because, well, it's just on parts of me, and it's going to take a couple of days before, like, all kind of, like, works its way out. Or is it on something in the house? Or is it I just have, like, skunk PTSD, and I just think I smell... Like, fucking skunk stuff everywhere. I don't know. It's bad.
How's
I'm in a
Jessica
bad place.
Taking it? Is she okay?
Yeah, she's sleeping. We cleaned her ass, and then she went underneath a blanket and moved on like nothing fucking happened. The rest of us, unfortunately, have to deal with the consequence of this.
I mean, dogs already have such strong senses of smell. My guess is, like, Pixel's already smelling all sorts of shit anyway.
Yeah, I don't even know if it was that bad. I think it's just that it got in her mouth, which is bad, because it got in my mouth, too. Not good.
Yeah, no,
Fortunately, I'm still married. That's really, like, the takeaway from this is that my wife woke up, she helped us, she got herself into the shit. I mean, like, I was off cleaning myself and trying not to vomit everywhere, and she went and took our dog, calmly looked up online what you're supposed to get together, which... For people who are curious, is like a mixture of hydrogen peroxide and baking soda and dish soap is basically.
Oh, that makes sense, actually.
Those are actual cleaning things.
Yeah. and they're not gonna, like, be irritants, and they're not gonna mess with your. It works both on your clothes and works on your animal that gets hit. Some mixtures actually do involve tomato juice, but the tomato juice is not there because it's a cleaning. It's just being used because it's like a not particularly awful, overpowering smell right. that can then right. replace the skunk smell. But the like the baking soda and hydrogen peroxide are used to actually get rid of like the whatever gel or whatever it is that like is causing the smell. So let's see.
So as far as intros go, I feel like this podcast intro has been informative.
Yes.
It's been educational. It's been dramatic.
Very much so.
There was conflict. There was action. There was a twist. The twist was tomato juice doesn't make it better. It just hides the smell.
Yeah, I was actually going to say, Austin, it sounds like maybe Patrick's experience with this skunk was about as fun as your intro in Assassin's Creed Origins, which you also wrote about. And, you know, two stories on the same general topic makes a trend.
It does.
So we're talking about intros today.
There was a moment yesterday where I was like, you know, to be clear to people who maybe haven't got a chance to see the site in the last couple of days, obviously it's a big release week. Wolfenstein, the new Colossus is out. Mario Odyssey is out. Assassin's Creed Origins is out. Destiny 2 is out on PC. Speaking of introductions that are pretty strong, that game has a pretty strong intro. And you and I both independently wrote about the introductions of the two games that we'd been playing that day or you know, in the last couple of days. And you'd kind of written about how forceful, let's say, the opening
intense.
Moments of intense the opening moments of Wolfenstein the new Colossus were, and I wrote about how bad the intro to Assassin's Creed Origins was. I mean, there was a moment a couple of nights ago, Pat, where Patrick IM'd me.
And, oh my god!
And yeah, you were just like, I forget exactly what you said, but it was basically like, did I miss something? Like, did something broken about this intro? And like, no, it immediately, all right, some background, Assassin's Creed Origins, it's the first Assassin's Creed game in a couple of years. They took a year off. It had been a yearly franchise. There were some years where multiple Assassin's Creed games came out on top of big DLC drops for the previous Assassin's Creed. You know, there were years when there were three or four Assassin's Creed products that
there'd be like
purchase.
A remaster, a mobile
yes.
game, a
mobile
3DS
games,
game,
a
Vita
game,
then like between the expansion.
Freedom's Cry.
Yeah, Freedom Cry. And if you like add all that together, you essentially could be playing... I mean, what they wanted to do, like a lot of games, like have you playing Assassin's Creed all year long if you chose to.
So they, you know, they take a year off and they say, all right, we're going to double down on this. There's a thing, you know, when the review code shows up, often a thing that happens is publishers will send around a review guide, which is like, here are some things you should try out. Here are the quests that we'd really love it if you didn't spoil. this one was like, we've worked on this game for 4 years. And like... 4 years is a long time. It's a long time to work on a single project, for sure. But, like, a lot of games do go for 3 or 4 years. But the fact that it's an Assassin's Creed game that had a four-year dev cycle is a big deal. And so I booted it up, and I was like, I'm ready to go. Like, take me away. Take me to ancient Egypt. Not ancient Egypt. It's not actually ancient Egypt. It's like, 37 BCE Egypt. There's an older Egypt way before that.
Oh,
the old
wow.
kingdoms of Egypt go back way into the BCEs. But this is like, you know, Cleopatra and Ptolemy, Civil War, Egypt. And I'm like, I'm ready to go. And like, you hit start and you're chasing a guy down like a tomb and you stab him. And then there's like his bodyguard, I guess, shows up. And you're like, I guess I got to fight this guy. And it very poorly tutorializes the combat. And then you leave and you run into a guy who's getting jumped. And you're like, ah, it's my friend. I got to help him. And you like fight three people again with like the very loose tutorialization.
It tutorializes everything. Like it doesn't like explain the climbing well. It doesn't explain like the first thing you do after the first combat encounter is like click the stick to like, you know, do one of those like sort
do
of like
a
pulse thing to see where to go next. Like it took me like 45 seconds to find where to go. Like I had to like rub against it. It's
really bad. And
my jaw was on the floor. Yeah.
You get through all of that. There's no setup for the narrative. You get through all of that. You get a very brief flashback that's like you stare at the Pharaoh and you're like, oh, I'll see you later, Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh looks back and he has like four guys with masks on and they look like they're up to no good. And then your guy grimaces. And then you're just in the open world. And they're trying to be very restrained and subtle with their storytelling, and like, we're gonna start in media res, and like, and then they come back and fill in the details. But for the first like 3 hours of that game, you're doing quests for characters who they don't introduce well in a place where it seems like you're a big deal, but like you haven't been there for a while, but they don't really explain why. And more importantly, they just like, it doesn't feel it for that whole first 3 hours. It felt like I'd missed a big cutscene. Like it felt like they'd cut it out and just structured it so that cutscene would come at the end of that big tutorial section instead of at the beginning. And so it just makes a terrible first impression because it's both over tutorializing stuff. Like, it just constantly, there's notifications up on your screen about what buttons to press and like what you should be doing. But also it never goes into the depth of any of that stuff, which is a big deal because this new Assassin's Creed game has new combat. It has like a new type of itemization. It's an action RPG when it comes to like weapons and equipment. Like, you're getting new bows that do poison damage versus do fire damage versus have critical hit effects, or this bow can fire 3 shots at once and this one can zoom in. You're getting like all different types of weapons on your like your melee side. You're getting, you know, new outfits and stuff. Like, there's a lot to do and to dig into. You know, there's obviously a big skill tree, and it just does a garbage job of tutorializing almost any of it, while also making you feel overburdened by the restrictions of this tutorial mode, or of this kind of early first section. And the thing that's so frustrating is that game is pretty good. And I can imagine a lot of people bouncing off of the first couple of hours, especially the first couple of like minutes. Like, I would bet money that there are hundreds or thousands of people who stopped that game and restarted it because they thought they buttoned through an introduction.
Like, that's why I messaged you, because yes. I've been playing Mario, and I was like, oh, like, I got this code for Assassin's Creed. Like, I at least want to boot it up and just see like, what's the intro to this game, even though I'm going to put this on the back burner till sometime in December. But I've played the most of the Assassin's Creed games. Like, I generally like the series and was excited to see them kind of not reboot it, but like try from a different angle. And yeah, I had my phone on and was kind of looking over and was just like, I thought I legitimately skipped over like 20 minutes 100%. Or something like that.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. It doesn't feel like you've skipped over 5 minutes or 30 seconds. It feels like you've skipped 20 minutes. It feels like you've skipped an entire sequence.
Like, somehow the game said, like, hey, like, do you just want to jump into the action? And I accidentally hit X and was like, yeah, let's jump into the action.
Yep. It's super weird.
How much do you want to bet there was something there that it just didn't pass muster? They had to cut it last minute. They reordered things. Like, how much do you want to bet that that's what happened?
I could imagine them reordering things. So I've gotten to the point, like, you finish that section and then you get the big hefty, or like at the final act of that opening moment, or the final sequence of the opening, is like you're kind of running around and getting these flashbacks to when Bayek, who's the main character, like had this traumatic event happen that sent him on his path for vengeance. And that stuff feels like it was supposed to be spread out over the course of this whole opening bit, and instead it's all chunked up at the back end. It's so hard for me to imagine there was not something else at the top of that game at some point, and someone made a it's so jarring. I don't understand. I don't know. Maybe not like a whole, maybe they didn't do the whole thing and then like move it, but like, I have to imagine at some point someone said, yeah, we're just gonna have to ship it like this.
Just have to put it in, throw it in, do it up. I mean, speaking of good games with kind of crappy intros, I'm feeling a little bit that way about Mario Odyssey.
Oh, yeah?
As well.
I've literally seen what I saw at E3 of Mario, and then I've seen like 20 or 30 minutes other places on the internet. I missed Patrick's stream of it. I have no idea how that game starts. Can y'all talk to me about
it? Yeah, I mean, Patrick, you've played a lot more of this than I have. I've only played a couple hours, and of course, did the intro again last night. It's just like, the reason it's bad isn't that it, is supposed to be some amazing, you know, scene-setting, storytelling event. Mario games are not, I mean, I suppose Mario RPG games have really cool stories and go a little bit more in-depth, but that's not really the reason you're playing it. And it sure is, like, bananas and you know, colorful, but the whole thing is, for some reason, Bowser wants to marry Peach, so he's in, like, his little pimp Bowser outfit, basically, and he just has her in his hands, and he's like, oh, all of a sudden, we're going to get married now. And then he, like, throws his hat at Mario's crotch, and he falls off of the magic ship that he's on. Peach is damseled again, and also there's a guy called Cappy who is a sentient cap, who is the reason why you can sort of, in the actual game, take over powers, take over, you know, different characters, use their powers, etc. It's a main gameplay mechanic, and it's really cool. But Cappy also has a sister who's been damseled, and she lives on Peach's head. And I know this sounds insane, because it is, but it's just kind of like 30 seconds of, like, oh, you know, let's just do the damsel thing, and also none of this makes sense, so pimp Bowser. I don't know. It just didn't inspire a whole lot of happy emotion.
I'll be clear, Bowser is not actually a pimp.
Dressed like a pimp. That is the pimp Bowser outfit.
Okay.
He's like a white official suit. Official Nintendo. It's like a white suit with a white hat and a whole, like, he has coattails.
He's
I
just
think.
The Gucci Mane, like, Bowser. He's just trying to, like, have a fly wedding, okay?
I guess.
He has a big All sword. Right. He's going to cut his whole cake with a giant diamond sword. It's going to be good.
I suppose. Patrick, you've played much
also,
more, so I know
Goo-wop.
You know
I know that
more not, about
neither
it.
Of you follow Goop? Gucci Mane, but Goo-wop, which Goop? Is one of Gucci Mane's many...
Goo-wop.
Goo-wop. Goop. Goop is a different thing. So I just want to say that Goo-wop sounds like a thing that would be sung by a Goomba inside of a modern Mario game on beat with the music. So someone make that. Mello, I know you're out there. Mello is one of our moderators on the Waypoint forums who does amazing remixes. Just make it happen.
Just do it.
Thank you.
I mentioned this briefly in my write-up about the game that they do poke fun about, I'm loath to say sort of like what happens, because I think it's kind of interesting and probably worth like writing and commenting about when people have a little more time with the game. But there's something that happens towards the end of the game and related to the end game that the game is self-aware of that criticism and of that trope, but I don't know that putting it, you know, 15 hours and at the end necessarily justify. Yeah. Like, it would be, if they wanted to subvert it, you need to, like, set up the subversion a little earlier so that the, like, it kind of blindsided me when the subversion happens, because it's like, oh, like, I just figured they were going to do what they always do, which is that, like, even in Odyssey, there's, like, some, like, cultural appropriation happening with some of the settings. And it clearly comes from a place of, like, not malice, but ignorance, and just sort of, like, we're just going to take a bunch of things and
sombreros.
Jumble them up. Which is what this game is on, like a core level, is just jumbling things up and doing things with them, like, from the mechanics, from the theming, to the art, right? Like, that's, there's, like, that is core to what Odyssey is as a game, so I'm not, so when you look at it, it's like, does that make it, like, 100% okay? No. Like, but there is a, like, there is a difference between, like, malice and sort of, like, ignorance or...
Like, naivety.
Like, the scale between, like, Mario Odyssey and South Park, right? Like, if we're to take two games that, like, sort of, like, touch on different things, like, there's a difference between, like, the approaches of those two things.
Well,
like, I don't want to hand wave...
The South Park side shows that they should know better, right? Like, we just had that story go up today from one of our freelancers, from Jennifer, right? Jennifer Uncle,
Jennifer.
Who wrote about the way that South Park, the Fractured Butthole, like, deals with actually playing as a trans character, which is like, oh, like, a lot of places reported, like, oh, wow, it's rad, you can pick that you're trans. And then, like, she writes, like, oh, right, but then, like, a lot of characters will continue to misgender you throughout the rest of that game. And, like, there is a, that, the fact that that happened, like, not just oh, it just defaults to he, him, but, like, or in her case, defaulted to he, him, because she was playing as a trans woman, but, like, there, like, are jokes about being an effeminate little boy instead of being a woman or a girl. And, like, that shows that team, and, like, the sequence with Mackie where, like, he's walking through what cisgendered and transgender mean and blah, 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 and that suggests, like, oh, hey, they know enough to where you can do more than just criticize what is on the paper or what is in the game, but also can criticize, like, hey, you should have stopped at your workflow at, you know, some point in the development process and been like, is this the right direction? Whereas with Mario Odyssey, I saw them give their talk about this at E3, like an event at E3 about Odyssey, where they're like, we just went all around the world in real life and had such a good time, and there were sombreros and mariachi bands, and we went, and like glowing about, like, all of the places they'd been, and they want to just, we went to New York, and New York has, like, it's big, and there are people at, like, it was just like this, like, just completely, like, you know, ebullient, like, just glowing love of the world, and
like
I
coming from the right place.
Right, like, again, I still think,
right, it's like, it could still be, I still could have problems, but it, but it does
Mexico
come.
Land is, like, right. a little, right. it's not actually called that, but, like, it kind of, like, okay.
It's basically.
The Mexico Kingdom.
It's
yeah.
like a collar tug versus a, like, all right, you fucking see me after class,
right?
Stone and sure. Parker, we got to talk. So yeah, I mean, again, I haven't played any Mario yet, but does that intro at least set up, like, there's the other side of this, which is, like, does the intro set up the mechanics in an interesting way? Do you leave it going, like, I cannot wait to play more Mario?
There's just a hat and a crotch. Like, it's, okay, that's all it well, is. Like, the
I'm
intro
not here
itself
to judge.
Is... It's short. No, look, if you like hats in your crotch, you know, go with God. You know, enjoy. You can have all that you want. It's just, it doesn't really say anything about the game. It's just, there's a hat and he's a person.
But there's not like an intro area that goes along with that stuff?
There is.
Like, oh,
there is.
The
and I think that's
now.
A lot.
You can do cool stuff.
That's a lot better. Like, okay. It's Hat Town or something. There's some name for it.
Hat
I'm
Town.
Sure. It is Hat Town. Okay.
No,
and that's fine.
I don't think it is. I was making it bullshitting.
You can jump. You can also jump and do weird crotch stuff on frogs. There's all sorts of stuff that you can
that.
Do. I think it's a really, really cool game. And once you're playing it, it's pretty strong. It's just that intro, which, you know, to be fair, it's like 30 seconds long. It's not like belaboring the point or anything. It's not trying to. I don't think it's trying
right.
to be the next great intro. It's just, you know. It's the damseling that just sort of annoys me a little bit because Peach was playable in the last Mario, in the last, you know, sort of Mario platformer,
3D
less
world,
3D
yeah.
platformer. Right. And so was Rosalina. And it was like, oh, you know, maybe they're kind of getting a little bit, maybe a tiny bit of the woke gamer, you know, showed up for them. So, I mean, I'm glad to hear that maybe something is done with it, but it just tweaks me the wrong way when it feels like, oh, maybe they're a tiny bit aware of things. Maybe they're gonna kind of go forward a little bit with this.
Oh, Nintendo, what are you gonna do? I this is a very brief aside, but I just want to say two things. One, I'm excited for Animal Crossing Pocket Camper.
Sure.
Pocket Camp. I watched that video, and that's a game I want to play. I saw some people complaining that you could only get fruit from trees once every 3 hours. And motherfucker, have you played Animal Crossing?
Yeah.
You get fruit from trees once a day, my dude. Like, you cannot... Anyway, second thing is, also Nintendo related, I played and beat Wolfenstein, the New Colossus, so we'll talk a little bit about that, because that has a hell of an intro also, and I know we want to talk generally about what intros are and like, what role they serve, but this is like the literal opposite of it, which is, after playing Wolfenstein, the New Colossus yesterday, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed, I've been playing a lot of Mordor, or Shadow of War, because I'm writing about that, like, I've been in this, like, what do I feel about video games? place where even the New Colossus, which I came out of feeling very positive about overall and thinking like, wow, this fucking goes for it in a way I did not expect. I 5 hours later was just like, yeah, I liked it. Like, And so late last night at like 1 a.m., I was like, I need to boot up Breath of the Wild and just see if I'm broken right now, or sure. if that is a genuine, like, let me calibrate. Let me, like, take a reading and see where I'm at.
You gotta calibrate your Joy-Con.
Exactly, and the Joy-Con being the internal Joy controller in my life
exactly.
to see if I'm actually capable of feeling true, you know, extensive joy. And so I was like, I'll just do like a shrine or a quest that I haven't done before. I looked through my quest, and I had a small quest. This is like the end of the game, right? Like, not post-game, because there is no post-game in Zelda. There's just like, you go up. There's not a post-game. There's just like, if you load your save, it just loads you up right before the final boss fight.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I have this quest. I have to go find this lady who got washed down river. Let me do that. And so I just start walking the river. Have you done this one, Danielle?
Yeah.
And Patrick?
Yeah.
Have you? And I just start walking the river from Zoro's Domain, and it's this long, long trek, right? And right away at the top of the thing, they're like, she might have wound up at Hyrule Lake. And I was like, yeah, I looked around Hyrule Lake when I first got this quest. I didn't see her anywhere. So let me just walk the river. And then 3 hours or 2.5 hours disappeared. And I just like did so many little quests I had missed and did a couple of shrines. I found a new stable that I'd never found before.
Oh, that's such a good feeling.
like, yeah. just 2 hours disappeared in a blink, and, like, I just fucking love that game so much, and it has the opposite of a really good ending, but in a positive way, or a really good intro, which is, like, the end game of that game is just still so dense with magic and, like, things that you can do, even after you've filled up all of the meters and gotten your Master Sword and put together, you know, all the heart containers or whatever you need, like, you still have so much to do and explore and just, like, sit in that space and feel good. So that is my, like, my favorite non-intro to a game, my favorite outro to a game is Breath of the Wild, for sure. But yeah, let's talk about Wolfenstein, which you wrote about, Danielle.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about what that intro is? And again, some light spoilers here for the beginning of that game, for sure, coming up. I know, Patrick, you're only halfway through the intro, in a sense.
So, you know, I had a pretty amazing experience with it the other day, and it's all on video. Like, all my real reactions are there, because we streamed it. Rob and I streamed it on Wednesday, and, you know, you start up the game, and it ends right where the first game takes off, which I haven't completely finished yet.
Other way around there. It takes off right where the last game ends.
Sorry.
No,
takes off
fine.
Right where the last game ends.
You know, if it was the other way, that would be...
Airplanes are hard, you know? other way would have been pretty interesting. But it wastes no time going just absolutely for the jugular. You start with BJ is injured, and he's having sort of flashbacks, and it flashes back to his, like, abusive childhood, where his father is, like, this racist, abusive, homophobic, anti-Semitic, like, piece of shit. Like, absolute piece of shit.
Yeah.
There's a cutscene where you are hiding as BJ, as a kid. You're hiding in a closet. Your mother's trying to protect you. And he drops the N-word, like, two or three times. He calls his mother bad names. Like, the mother is Jewish, which also is, like, confirmation that BJ is Jewish. I know that was kind of a thing for a while, that, like, he's probably a Jewish dude, but it wasn't necessarily super spelled out. But now, yes, it is. Like, there's nothing that's subtle about this.
It was made explicit in the New Order, but it was an open question during the earlier Wolfenstein. I believe this is, because I remember looking into this.
Yeah.
I believe it was the case that it was just implied that he had a Jewish heritage in previous Wolfenstein games, but it wasn't, because the story wasn't very important.
sure.
But then it was made sort of explicit.
Gotcha.
The New Order, like, explicitly digs into it as a sense of dramatic and comedic irony of, like, these sequences where these Nazis are like, oh, what beautiful Aryan features you have.
Right.
And, like, you motherfuckers, you bullshit artists, like, you terrible genociders. It's that stuff was really good. But the thing that I like about this intro, and we'll you know, I'm going to get into this probably in the piece that I'm trying to write about it today.
Yeah.
And that, given the time that it is, will probably slip until Monday. I'll have to finish it tomorrow because I still have to finish that other piece. So this sequence is, like, BJ's father is not just, like, a racist, homophobic, like, asshole. He
and abusive
an anti-Semitic
as well.
And
like,
abusive.
Hitting the wife, hitting BJ,
Hitting BJ, like, doing violence to their dog, like, it's shitty. It's shitty, but also is just, like, mediocre white dude who's run his business into the ground and is bitter about it and looking for an excuse. And the thing that I actually like about it is not that is, like, their fucking law. Anybody who's ever said that that game doesn't have a politics or, like, that game isn't trying to make a political message is... Pete Hines, like, I know you said you hate Nazis, which is good. I'm glad that you said all that shit. You also said that you're not sending any specific political message. This game has a deep and very obvious political message right now, which people will get to as they play through that game. And I'm not going to talk about. But one of them, you know, obviously up top is, like, this notion of, like, the bitter, like, deplorable, quote unquote, who is, like, figure. A composite figure that we've spoken about in political reporting and in political conversation and analysis for the last couple of years with the rise of Trump, this, like, lower middle class, working class white voter who people theorized were the base of Trump's party or Trump's, you know, voting bloc, even though if you look at the statistics, what's revealed is, in fact, that lots of middle class, upper class, college educated, 100K plus making white folks voted for Trump. They're already digging into that, but the thing that I actually think works here, the thing that I think actually works both here and throughout the game, is it is almost easier to position BJ Blazkowicz as a Jewish American hero who takes down the Nazi war machine. What this game does is, here in the intro and then in a few other key places, makes BJ complicit in his whiteness, and it makes it clear that he can't. The fact that he is Jewish is important and is a compelling part of why he does what he does. But it's interesting to make him confront his father as a symbol of his ability to pass in spaces that people of color can't pass in, his maleness as a character who is big and bulky and an action hero and is feared in ways that women are not feared in this game, in the same way, despite being just as heroic and just as committed to Nazi killing as he is.
yeah.
And the game actually digs into that here a lot with his development of his masculinity and his like anti-Nazi shit, like his anti-Nazi like feelings as both responses to his father. Like at once in this intro, you see BJ as like, yo, I'm not going to grow up to be like my shitty dad. And also I'm going to just try to knock my shitty dad out. Like I'm going to try my best to beat the shit out of him. And like, that is throughout the game is a thing that they do keep coming back to. And it's one of the reasons why I think the intro works is because they don't leave it there. If they had left it there and like not come back to it, I think it would have been a huge miss. But because they keep coming back to it and not just directly to it, but through other kinds of thematic moments, I think it does a good job. That said, I think you also make a compelling case that maybe, Danielle, that there is something else here that maybe like it overdoes it.
Yeah, that's what I was struggling with when I was writing this piece that sort of starts out with, I already hated this guy. You know, he drops the N-word, as a white dude, the second he drops the N-word, the second he looks like he's going to raise his hand to his wife, all of these things, like, I already hated this guy. And then, you know, the intro does one better by trying to make him, force you to kill the family dog, this like beloved, sweet, you know, sweet faced dog. I almost cried just like sitting there. I put the controller down. I was like, I'm not shooting Bessie. I had this really emotional reaction to it. And I was kind of like, I didn't need that to make me hate this person. And Austin, you had a really good point, and I think it really, really helped me sort of find what I was trying to say about the intro, is that maybe it needed to go that over the top because of the world we live in, because somebody could have conceivably made the jump to, oh, you know, this guy is an economic anxiety crew. That's what he's part of. Yeah, he's not really racist.
This isn't real racism. Right.
Exactly. And that is 100% that tracks for me. Absolutely. Like, yeah, you do need to go that hard today.
To be fair, like I am with you, and also like not 100% sure that I buy that argument that even I made that asked you to kind of open it up. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes as an editor, what you want to do is make sure an argument is watertight, even though in your gut you're like, yeah, no, that guy's a cartoonish villain, and real Nazis, like real fascists, often are not that. We don't need them to be cartoonish villains.
Right, but it goes even further with Frau Engel, which is like that's where it truly gets almost cartoonish. Yeah. Like she, I'm sorry, Patrick. I know this is going to be spoiler territory for you, but she was already a Nazi piece of shit. Like she in the first game, she's already a horrific, abusive, horrible person. In this game, you know, just in the intro, she is shaming the crap out of her daughter.
Right.
She's being fat phobic. She's being incredibly homophobic. She kills someone and rubs a woman and rubs their decapitated head in her daughter's crotch. You know, just say how disgusting she is for being queer. It is like so beyond over the top. It's in orbit around Venus. Like it is beyond. So that is where maybe it goes like a little too far. I already wanted her to die.
Right.
Know?
That's the stuff where I feel like it does show that this game was being made 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, where it's like, oh, we can have these cartoonish supervillains. And there are other moments like that in this game, for sure. but without getting too deep into it, there are also other moments where like, no, Nazis are people. Like there's I don't want to give any more context, but there's an exchange that is just like somebody says, oh, they're monsters. And somebody's like, nah, they're men, and like means it. And it's like, they're people. Like they're not. It's not that that Nazis are actually monsters. It's that these are people who have convinced themselves or been convinced or have decided to do terrible, inhumane things. But it's important to remember that they're humans first. And like that is not because we should respect them, but because we should not give them the And this is in line with your argument, right? Give them the protection of making them monsters instead of people. If someone's a monster, then like they're not. If someone's a wild dog, if a wild dog raised in the, if a wolf kills me, like I don't blame the wolf, right? Like this is the scorpion and the frog, right? Like it's in the scorpion's nature to kill the frog. It is not in the nature of anyone to commit genocide. Like I reject wholeheartedly any sort of Leviathan-esque, the true state of nature of humanity is to be at war and to kill each other. Like, no, it's bullshit. The sociology doesn't support it. The ethnography doesn't support it. The anthropology doesn't support that notion. And once you do the research, it doesn't hold up that is the true nature of man, and that somehow genocide and tribalism is like the way forward, or is some innate true nature in people. And the game does a really good job of pushing back against that, and instead trying to tell a story about, again, I don't want to get too deep, but about collaboration, about coalition building, about there being real difference between people's political views, but also everyone being able to come together and be like, yo, fuck a Nazi, though. and I don't, like, I think that intro goes really hard, really fast to try to get that momentum building. But then, like, they find their footing, I think. The other half of this intro is, of course, that like it's kind of a slow, boring gunfight through a U-boat. Sure. It's my least favorite level in the game. I get that it's an intro. I think it's interesting that he's in a wheelchair for it, and that like the stuff that happens after that is still him as a disabled character. They actually represent that in a mechanical way besides the wheelchair, even like once he's up and about moving. I don't want to spoil like how he gets up and about moving, but he has reduced health. He has 50 health instead of 100. And that's like a thing you live with. Like you live with that for the game. Like you don't, he is not the person he was in Wolfenstein, the New Order, where he had 100 health. And I think that's like a very small thing, because it is a disability for this character, given what you knew about his previous stature. And it doesn't stop you from killing a bunch of Nazis. And that's kind of interesting, especially because one of my, not beefs, but like with the New Order, the notion of like, oh, he's been in this hospital for 17 years and then stands up and just beats the shit out of 30 Nazis was like, I had a fun time doing it, but like I would have liked them to have like, at least nodded towards the fact that maybe some of his muscles would have atrophied. This time they do, and that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think whenever developers make a mechanic out of something like that, it's not the same thing at all, but it does harken back to when Mafia 3 did some really interesting things, like making something a mechanic that you actually have to deal with as the player, not just a fact of the world or a fact that you could kind of ignore as a player. I do think there's a lot of strength in that, and I do really appreciate that about the intro as well.
I am curious about what like disabled players think about that intro in general and about ability and disability. This game keeps going down this road in terms of exploring what bodies mean, what white male bodies mean, especially, and like it is, they do a good job of trying to confront that. My own personal jury is still out on how well they confront it, but like they at least lean in, they go for it. They don't just like, they at no point put on kid gloves and say, I don't want to address this thing. So, Patrick, what did you think of this intro?
I think one of the, I literally saw this intro and then played at like part of the U-boat sequence and then turned it off.
Gotcha.
I have like an hour left in South Park and then...
Oh, you're going to push through.
I've looked back at the games that I've like finished 3/4 of, and that list is like extremely long. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take a breather. I'm taking a couple days off next week. And I have like several games on my Switch that I'm like 3/4 through. And I was like, okay, I'm going to like checkbox some of those and then get over to some of these games. But one of the conversations I saw around this intro was Holly Green, a critic who wrote a story or an article or an observation piece for Pace Magazine, was she had like a very intense personal reaction to the intro because of the way it uses the framing of abuse and in a way that like really chilled her to the core because of some personal experiences. And it's good to know that the game, I didn't read her piece because I was going to read it after I played a little bit of the game because I wanted to like experience it as much on my own. But I think it's good to hear that the game tries to make good on what it sets up there, because this is something that I experience a lot when I watch horror movies, is that horror movies have traditionally exploited abuse, especially of a sexual nature, in order to shock the audience, because it's largely a predominantly male audience as well that watches horror. Right. And so they, like, the fact that rape is a trope in horror is, like, a really bad thing that, like, they're often using purely for the shock value of the rape, not because the rape is any sort of inherent storytelling value. It's not, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So what I was interested in seeing Holly's response to this, and I assume lots of other people will have, now that, you know, everyone was, you know, hiding in a closet, but still there are, like, so many people that have a whole spectrum of abuse in all sorts of forms that I can imagine them watching this and being like, it's not that games can't do stuff like this. It can't use abusive frameworks. It can't use the same way that a horror movie can use sexual assault as a framework if there's a justification in the storytelling for it to be there beyond just trying to shock you. And so it's encouraging about what the two of you are saying about where the game goes is that it's not just there. And I would have been surprised by this given the storytelling chops and the ambitions of the original game, even for the stuff that it doesn't necessarily quite land on.
Yeah.
Like it takes some big swings, and I appreciate a game that tries to take this, because in order for games to get better at landing the punches,
yep,
they have to take the swings to begin with. And what I have admired about the New Order and what I'm excited about experiencing in the New Colossus is it sounds like they take the swings.
My dude, they take some of the biggest swings I've ever seen in a video game. They take some of the biggest swings I've seen in this sort of storytelling period. Many of them hit in a way that I was, you know, kind of enwrapped by this game. I think the game has incredible pacing, especially once you get through the U-boat sequence and into the second level. Like, nothing overstays its welcome as far as, like, gameplay moments or levels for me. Like, everything felt, which was my biggest problem with the first game. Like,
something important I want to say is that I think a lot of people that reviewed this game across the board, this is just standard, like, and this is how most media outlets work, and this is not just video games, this is television, movies.
Yeah.
You tend to assign people that played the previous thing because they have context and would enjoy another one of those things.
Right. I bounced off of the New Order twice. Once during this Waypoint 101 series that we theoretically still need to finish.
We will finish it.
We should. It'll happen. I played through the first like 7 or 8 chapters of the New Order and then just like couldn't get the time or energy to go back to it. I ended up spoiling myself and watching all of the remaining cutscenes and looking at all the levels and reading about the side story stuff and all of that. Yeah, I don't mind. I don't mind. Listen, I'll pick the baby difficulty. I'll tell myself I'm a cheater. I don't give a fuck. I'm trying to spend my time like an adult. I did all that and like bounced off that first game again twice. Like, I previously tried to play it too. And this one just like I didn't want to put it down until the moment I was done. And even then, like, there's still side stuff I could go do. Like, it has a different sort of structure by the end that lets you return to some levels and do some cool side stuff, which is not what you expect.
It's awesome.
And it's new side stuff with new dialogue, new character, like new NPCs and stuff. And it has a narrative. It has like a narrative frame for why you're doing it too. It's really, and there's collectibles
enough,
there if you want.
Not enough single player shooters find some sort of narrative.
Dude, it's really
to, like,
fucking
let
cool.
You go back that isn't just do another difficulty.
Yep,
or
no,
play it again.
It is a really cool, like, that final act. It opens things up in a really cool way. But even throughout that the whole game, like, just briefly, because I know people are interested, like, I think it's a really strong first person shooter. It is wild to me to think that like a Call of Duty World War II is going to come out and have to compete with this in terms of single player narrative, because like it's not even going to try to do the same thing. I know that, but it. And I'm still just gathering my thoughts because I'm trying to write about it right now. But it understands the stakes of war and the causes of fascism taking hold in a way that was really relieving to me. There are sequences in this game where I breathed a sigh of relief because someone said something honest in a video game. And that is not a thing I anticipated going into it, right? Like, it's set in America. It's very concerned with the notion of, like, how would America fall to Nazis? And it never settles for the simple answer of, like, it never settles for the simple answer. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
Just play this fucking game. Not my favorite of the year. Like, I, again, 5 hours after I beat it, I was like, all right, I'm done with it, moving on. Like, it'll be in my top 10, probably. It'll probably be in the top half of my top 10, if I'm guessing, depending on as I go through and rethink about games like Nier. But yeah, it is something pretty special, and I hope people find the time. It's also, I beat it in like 12 hours. Like, again, lots of side stuff, but very well paced, lots of cool levels. You move from level to level very smoothly, and lots of great characterization. Also a cool hub. All right, I'm gonna stop talking about it. We'll talk more about it on Monday once people play
more. I'm really
more
glad you're so excited about it, I have to say. And as we've been sitting here talking about it, we're gonna take an ad break in just a second, but something I've sort of realized and sort of crystallized for myself listening to you talk a bit about it, and also with that context from the Holly Green piece, how much it's conflating abusers with, like, the sort of, oh, run-of-the-mill abuse, at, you know, quote-unquote, abuse that you could find in any domestic setting on any day, conflating that with the kinds of things that can create fascism, can create Nazis, can create all these horrible things in our world. And I like that parallel.
It doesn't draw the one-to-one. It does suggest, even just in that intro, that there are people who benefit from fascism. There are people who the world becomes easier for them when you are – not just fascism, right? But like this very specific sense of white Christian male dominance, straight also, right? Like very – again, there's a lot of –
able-bodied, straight.
Right, exactly.
Not fat. Like it literally does go through all of those places.
And then a thing that I like about it too is just like the characters on your side are also – not in agreement about a lot of stuff, and except for this one big thing, which is like, yo, fuck Nazis, and it is an easy thing to get behind right now, especially. We are 77 days since Heather Heyer was killed in Charlottesville. Like, I checked out last night. That is not a lot of time since a fascist killed a protester in our country,
and even less since they tried to last.
Right, exactly, exactly.
Shooting
with the attempted shootings, yes, very recently, exactly. Like, I don't know. I'm gonna not just speak the notes that I'm trying to write this piece with, but
sure.
My brain is all over the place right now. We should take that break that you were talking about, Danielle.
Yeah, we're gonna take a very quick break for an ad, and then we'll be right back to interrogate other good interests. Okay, cool. So I think
maybe the ad played there. We don't know. We're doing our best. If the ad didn't play in that break, trust us. We know. We are in contact with the company that does the weird podcast programmatic ad placement. You do not need to let us know that it. I mean, let us know if it was in the wrong place again.
That was 2 months.
But we apologize.
Exactly. But know that we know. Yes.
We're just sorry for all of it, but we're not sorry about intros that we like. I want to broaden it out to what makes a memorable good intro for both of you, and what if you have a couple of – I have like three good examples. I was racking my brain for like other really good intros that really set a tone, set a place.
You're
but
putting
let's
me on the spot
talk,
here. You gave yourself time
I got
to come
you guys.
Up with a good intro.
I got
saying
y'all.
First we should talk about what makes a memorable intro, or what makes a good intro. What makes something that actually sticks in your brain? What is sticky about a good intro?
They kind of go in two different directions for me, Danielle. One is – one is just like a narrative, like boom, bap, like a little bit of like a bombastic, like we're in it now. We're going hard. Like things are really intense. Things are explosive. Like lots of like. So I made this tweet. I made the tweet that was getting ready to record today's Waypoint Radio. Our topic is game introductions. What are your standouts? Love them or hate them? 350 replies later, ooh, it turns out lots of people have feelings about this. One of the ones that came up a bunch were the Saints Row intros, intros like that, which were like, this isn't what the bulk of the game looks like, but they are, like Saints Row 3 and 4 especially, just like out of the gate, high energy. It's tone setting, exactly. And so like tone set is one of the things that a lot of people like landed at. Another one that is a big tone setting thing, or another two are Half-Life's intro, which is like this incredible tone setting, like solitude on this train, walking through the opening area of Black Mesa, kind of meeting all the scientists, like this air of this ominous mystery of like when are things going to like jump off. And then Mass Effect 2, which has this like incredible intro, fairly short, but like everything is falling apart, and everything you're walking through spaces that you know that you're familiar with if you played the first game, and it's all wrong. Everything is wrong, and everyone is hurt and falling away. And it's like, again, like really good tone setting, a really good tone piece.
totally agree. For me, it's a lot of it is, I know people have said Last of Us in here, and I think Last of Us is a good example of, like, it's almost, it's just in the way that it's taking a whole lot of horror tropes and is taking a whole lot of, you know, game dad tropes. So it's not exactly the most original of these that I would have, but I do think it does an amazing job setting a very sad tone, a very helpless tone, and a very just evocative and emotional tone in general. That's one of them for me, for sure. And I know that's it comes up a bunch in this thread here. But one that actually I really think is a fantastic intro, that it's not bombastic at all, at least not at the beginning, but Alien Isolation starts with a very understated kind of moment where the main character, the general gist is that you're playing the daughter of Ripley, and all she wants in the world is some closure on whatever the hell happened to her mother. And she's just sort of working on a ship or something. She's a mechanic, she's an engineer, just like her mom. And one of her android buddies kind of comes in and says, you know, there's a hint of knowing what happened to your mom. Do you want to go on this mission? Mm-hmm. And that sort of starts the whole thing. But the lighting in that scene,
that's tone setting too, right? Like, it isn't nice. Bombastic. Right,
Baby Fantastic is the name of this podcast. I think we got a boombastic today.
It's you know, it's not that, but it is still that tone setting. Like, this is what you're signing up for, right? Like, someone else mentioned Wild Vulture on Twitter mentioned XCOM Enemy Unknown, and just like, all right, you start this game, three of your people are dead. Have fun. That's what this game is. Like, you're going to get through this first mission and you're going to have one person escape alive, one or two, and that is it. And like, yep, that's a good tone set in terms of like what you're signing up for. Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I also appreciate, so a lot of people have mentioned like BioShock, which has I think really tremendous intro. I think actually like both BioShock and BioShock Infinite have like pretty great intros, at least like to the sort of like reveal of their cities. But the reason I like the BioShock intro is less. The introduction of Rapture is great on its own. But I always can appreciate a game that seamlessly transitions from its cutscene to gameplay in a way that is seamless, as opposed to being we're in cutscene, we're in gameplay.
I've been thinking about this a lot because of Wolfenstein, which. This is like the weirdest side thing, but I've been thinking about, obviously been thinking about Irrational, been thinking about the immersive sims, I've been thinking about Wolfenstein as this mid-ground between major action game and more traditional immersive sim, which is like, you know, it has things to pick up. There are little secrets that you can explore. They're lovingly crafted levels, but also you're not like, I mean, I guess you're sneaking through some places. There are some abilities that you get that let you sneak around, and you're never hacking a computer terminal, right? There's no non-lethal playthrough to Wolfenstein the New Colossus. There are options with how you want to kill Nazis, but you're going to be killing Nazis. But I then started thinking about the BioShock games. I was kind of thinking about how BioShock in general and that whole school of game design, thinking about people who've spoken about this, like Sean Elliott, who is a big proponent of like never cut away to a cutscene, like always stay with the main character, always stay with the first person perspective. If you're playing a first person game and deliver narrative that way, and how Wolfenstein feels like it just doesn't give a fuck about that. And it's like, no, actually, we're just gonna have cutscenes. Like, you're gonna see BJ. You're going to see the other characters. They're going to be shot cinematically. We believe in cutscenes. And it's weird because I am with you, Patrick, in that I love when a game does that transition from cutscene into main gameplay like seamlessly. Even when that's like the camera then pulls down into position and now you're in third person or whatever instead of like the cool cinematic angle. But Wolfenstein has made me think about the value of cutscenes specifically. Like, the value of seeing BJ's whole body in certain scenes is so undeniable that like I'm so glad that the game did. It is in first person for some key stuff. Like, there is storytelling in first person, but it does leave that first person perspective when it's very important. And I applaud that they just said, like, you know, I know a lot of people want to be Half-Life. We don't quite want to be Half-Life. We want to be the game that lets you see, like, everything sometimes. Just that note there for sure.
And Patrick, you mentioned what else? BioShock Infinite as well, which I actually think is worth talking about and diving into, because I think that intro is much better than the game itself, and sort of what the intro purports to say maybe is better and more poignant than sort of what the game ended up saying, or what sort of ended up with the game. So the very beginning of BioShock Infinite, you're in the tower, whatever. You go up to Columbia, uh-huh. and you start out in that sort of beautiful World's Fair area, the very happy, you know, everything's wonderful. You're hearing the singing, all of this. There's no violence yet, even. And the first sort of violent act you can make in that game, which it almost goes downhill from there. But it has to do with an interracial couple who are being heckled. They're put on a stage, and you can either throw the baseball at them or throw the baseball at the cop who sort of puts them up there. And it's not subtle in any way, but at least it's not saying, well, they're both just as bad. You know, it's not going down that road at all. And it is really interesting to me how the game has gone from sort of that intro and what it seems to be saying, or at least what it seems to be wanting to say, versus what the thesis of that game actually became once you twist all the way towards the end of it.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that, like, everyone here is bad. It was one of the things that, like, every white person who is living in Colombia and, like, is happy about the current state of racial politics there is shitty and is complicit. It was interesting because at the time there was this response that came from a lot of white critics who were turned off by the game's violence, who wrote things like there was this the piece from Kirk over at Kotaku. I love Kirk's writing, but there was this piece that he wrote where he's like, you know, and you could just walk around drinking it in and you're eating all kinds of candy and hot dogs. And there's this amazing carnival tutorial section where you can launch magic at a hidden devil. And there are posters, so many posters everywhere. And you read them all and see all these names and brands and colors, and you keep having to just sort of stop and stare. And there are flowers everywhere, and a woman offers to sell you a flower to stick in your lapel. And then there's this huge robot dude standing there, and oh my god, it's a barbershop quartet singing the Beach Boys, and what? And like, that comes from Kirk. Chris Plant wrote a similar piece over at Polygon at the time, where it's like, then it pivots to like, then you're stabbing people with your sky hook. You're like, you have a claw that lets you zip around that level. And it's like very violent. Like the opening of this game or BioShock Infinite in general is just like, oh, I decapitated people with my sky hook. I ripped into his face. It is like, it goes all in on that side of things for hours and hours until suddenly you're also doing that to the black revolutionaries who are trying to overturn the shitty oppressive society. But the thing that, like, at the time, I remember being like, I don't want to walk around this fucking shitty racist utopia. Like, this place sucks. Like, I'm not soaking it in, my guy. Like, I feel terrible because I know if I was there, like, I wouldn't be there. I would be, you know, cleaning the floors or up on a stage about to get pelted by baseballs. Especially because I'm half black. Like, I am the great fear of white supremacy. A black dude and a white woman got together. Uh-oh. Like, and so, like, there was this response to me at the time. It was like, that intro is really good because I cannot wait to fucking blow this place up. And the big problem with me wasn't – and I do think that the violent – to be clear, I also did – there were moments where I was like, like, I can't believe how bloody this game just got. But that didn't feel like a betrayal to me. What felt like a betrayal was when they stopped understanding who they should be targeting with who they thought violence should be targeting. Or who they thought should be who should be painted as a villain worth that degree of violence, because the answer is the people, you know, what seceded from America so they could have slaves back, not the people who didn't want to be slaves anymore.
Yeah, the whole first level of that game, you're killing racist cops.
Yep,
that's specifically who it is. It's specifically cops in their, you know, cop outfits who are, you know, basically hurling slurs at times, or there's language all over the place that's just slurs all the time. So it's like, I almost wish we could revisit that part of the game and slice that out and sort of examine that in 2017 and sort of what that means and what that could mean and what it could have been. So that's worth,
So far, we've been talking about these great tone pieces, right? We've talked about BioShock Infinite. We've talked about BioShock, which, again, Patrick, the thing that it does that you're talking about is, like, then you get out of the bathysphere and the guy is like, pick up the wrench, and then there's a splicer, and it's terrifying and really good. But what about games that – what about the other type of intro, which is like, all right, we're going to help you get your footing. Here's how you play this game. What does that well? Does anything jump out of your mind about a game like that?
I'm going to say Prey. I think it does do that really well. You're learning all about that world sort of right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Even though it's not the real world, it is like putting you in this place. It's making you kind of solve those kind of first person puzzles. It's making you attack
right.
aliens and hide around and figure out what's going on with the mimics and stuff like that. I know. I said pray again, take a drink.
You know what? Probably a game that does sort of like its mechanical intro really well is Dark Souls, actually. In which when you enter into Dark Souls, you're in this very tiny, contained area. It's not very big, especially relative to the other like interconnected spots that you find in the rest of Dark Souls. But the tutorialization that happens in terms of the mechanics of the game are by reading these little things on the ground, which then become very important for the messages that you get from players later on. You learn the very basics of walking around, attacking, dying because you can die very quickly in those
right.
games, fighting a boss, and like in like a 10-minute span, it like summarizes like here's what you're going to be doing in some form or another, a microcosm of like the next 40 hours of this video game. Like it's like go to a space, poke around in it, die, poke a little further, find a boss, die, run to that boss, and like you figure out the formula really, really quickly in a way that I think like is very elegant when you go back and look at how it does it. It's very technical in a way that future games aren't as technical. Like they hide that a little bit more
right.
in Bloodborne and future Dark Souls games. But there's something to that original Dark Souls and the way it presents it that I think actually works, even if it's a little more plain spoken.
Totally. One for me is the everything in Metal Gear Solid up until you get to the elevator, basically, which is like, or not even the elevator. Like I guess probably up until like the first boss fight, like the I think it's Revolver Ocelot downstairs, but maybe even earlier than that. Maybe I am just talking about that first big room where there's water for you to always go and hide. I don't know if you remember this, but you first of all, it is a great tone intro because you get like a briefing while you're in like a torpedo being shot towards a military base, and there's like really good like soundtrack music playing, very good like synthy like espionage music playing, and you get to this one big room, and the goal is just to get to the elevator at the far side and go up. That's your whole goal. And there are like five guards, maybe three, maybe there's a camera. But the thing that it sets up is there's a bunch of like, it's a loading dock. So there's a bunch of like boxes you can hide in or around, like big shipping crates. You have the radar so you can see enemy positioning. But the thing that it gives you is the southern half of the screen or the southern half of the room is just this big pool of water that you can always dive into to reset the clock. You can always hide underwater to start over. And I remember as a kid just trying to get there without being seen at all, fucking up, sprinting back to the other side of the screen, diving under the water to hide, resetting the clock and trying again. And that sort of like open space to fuck up and practice was so helpful for me to get my head around guard patterns and like how to knock people out quickly without being seen, how to make sure that I'm not, you know, moving too fast. And I thought that was always a really cool segment. I think Metal Gear Solid 2 also does this, but the whole tanker intro where it's like you're gonna learn how to play this game by the end of this, and then we're gonna get you into some wild shit with part two, and those are the two that come to mind for me. Even though I'm not like the biggest Metal Gear fan, I think that those two start super well.
And any others, or should we go to a question?
Let's go to a question.
Yeah. All right, let's question. Do it. So this one, I was thinking about saving this for a possible Waypoint 101, but I think it's relevant now because this is a person who has been going to some of these protests and asked remain anonymous. But I think they have some really good thoughts here, so I'm gonna go ahead and ask their question slash sort of read their take here. So this person writes in: since y'all have announced the Waypoint 101 series while I was doing the New Order, I finished it twice. The game was one I passed up on when it first came out for many of the same reasons as you all, especially since at the time I was sick of killing Nazis in media as I felt they were played out. Also, I'm sorry, I'm saying you all instead of y'all just because I, you know, my accent doesn't do y'all that well, but fine, I'll do y'all. Sorry, it was a y'all.
Y'all's good. Y'all's
it was a y'all. It was a y'all. Let's go with it. The thing that stuck out to me the most about the first game is how well it actually mirrors how I view the left growing up in America. The resistance is broken and fighting for a vision of the world. The ruling class is deemed not only a perversion, but completely impossible. The empire has won, and it's up to the rest of us to find out how to survive within it. game doesn't even end in a hopeful way, just as the left was fairly hopeless in 2014. This brings me to the second game, which, if it is half as promising as it looks, then I am 100% on board. A little backstory on myself. I am a primarily self-taught Tennessee-born and raised Marxist. When the trailer played and there was a character 1 second talking about drinking whiskey and the next breath talking about the imperialist American army and the proletariat, I found one of the first video game characters that spoke to me on a base level. Made even better when I found out he, too, was from Tennessee. Well, I know the game will mirror the horror of the rise of fascism in America, arguably too well, since I am holding off on buying the game until after Saturday, a day I will spend actually fighting off Nazis from where my parents met and not far from where I grew up. I really hope the new games have some moments of hope to mirror the real left and social politics entering America again.
Yeah, totally, totally does. Like, I, you know, two of the main characters of this game, one of them is basically a Black Panther, is like a militant black activist. Another is an open Marxist, like socialist. Like, those things are not played as, they're not played for laughs, and they're also not downplayed as being small components of their, of who they are as people, or as being easily in line with what BJ is. Like, BJ has hard conversations with these characters who have lots of reasons not to trust him. Like, BJ Blazkowicz is a fucking Marine. He's part of the establishment, and yeah, he wants to kill some Nazis, but like, where were you when we were fucking marching for civil rights? Nowhere. And that is like a thing the game contends with. There's so much I want to talk about this game. I want to have a spoiler cast about this game so fucking bad, because whew. So yeah, I hope that they enjoy this game when it comes out. Or when they get back from actually protesting.
Also, be safe and yeah. Help others to mm-hmm. be safe as well while you're out there. But I salute you in your endeavors there. So another question, which ties into something else controversial from the last week or so. Somebody wrote in. I'm not sure if they wanted to stay anonymous, so I will just not read their name here. They wrote in and said, "Hello. When you find and purchase a video game that is new to you, there's a risk of supporting a game that is antithetical to your own beliefs or philosophies. I'm thinking of friends who played the new Life is Strange and only later learning of the studio scabbing or finding JonTron featured in A Hat in Time. Avoiding potential, quote, problematic faves seems like it could be done with a quick Google search. However, that relies on the luck of the algorithm, TM. Nice, that was all caps, the algorithm. Deciding to show the correct kind of controversy. I find this frustrating when trying to read more about leftist politics, worried that an author might actually be a TERF, which, by the way, I'll do a little sidebar here, which uh-huh. means trans, exclusionary, radical feminist, basically feminists who claim to be feminists with basically throwing trans women under the bus. They suck, and I am happy to put my name on they suck.
True. Okay.
Back to the letter. When the internet only tells me the controversy is their alignment towards Marxism. Building a network of trusted friends and publications can help, but it will fail when you're trying to reach out in new interests and you don't yet have that network developed. How do you decide which content is, quote, safe to support before diving in?" Whew. Okay.
Yeah, I you know, I think doing that research helps a lot, right? Like, having a network of people who are also interested in that space, and who are aware of the same sorts of kind of political interests that you have is important, because that can help you, like, know where you're about to send your money. Like, I didn't know shit about JonTron being in that game until friends of mine were like, "Yo, JonTron's in this game." Also, weird full disclosure, there's also, like, two Friends at the Table references in A Hat in Time, so I put that out there. Like, I haven't played that game. I'm not going to play that game. Like, it sucks that they left JonTron in, and sucks more that, like, some of the stuff that I've heard about the development history of that game seems rough. I don't know enough to speak definitively on it, but, like, it seems like it was a mess in ways that left a lot of people in negative positions. But, like, doing that research is the best thing that you can do, and you're going to miss sometimes. Like, it happens. Like, and the key is being vigilant and continuing to be vigilant even after you fuck up. And also to go out of your way to support stuff that you know comes from people you want to support, right? Like, I play a lot of AAA video games. It's our job. And lots of people play AAA video games. It's like one of the weird distinguishing factors, I think, about gaming compared to other media right now is that when I ask my independent musician friends, like, what are their favorite albums of the year, I tend to have heard about two or three of their top 10, you know, and the rest are like, I've never heard of that. That sounds dope. I'll go listen to that. When I ask my independent game development friends, like, what are you playing these days? They're like, oh, Wolfenstein and Dark Souls and and like other big budget AAA. Oh, I'm can't wait to play Mario. Everyone wants to play Mario. That's like, if all of your like hipster indie music friends all wanted to listen to the new Taylor Swift, like that is what it is. Like Mario is as poppy as pop games get, but it's also important and is developing new ideas and like in terms of gameplay mechanics and triple games are different in that way for at least this moment. So I have to cover and I want to cover big AAA games, but also it is the case that I do my best to go outside of that play experience and go play things. Like I mentioned Dijana recently by Jack King Spooner. Jack Spooner King, Jack? I think King Spooner. Jack King Spooner, which is like, oh, this is a small game that I would have totally missed if all I did was go and look at whatever the hottest new releases were on Steam. So like, combination of being vigilant, doing that Googling, talking to friends, and then also going out of your way to find stuff from small developers and small creators who you know are really cool, who are working on cool stuff, who are politically aware, or who are, you know, giving part of their proceeds to a cause that you care about. Like, I think about something,
or
again,
come from marginalized populations in general.
Totally,
as well.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. It stuff's out there. What's really funny is when the opposite happens. I don't know if you've seen any of this, but like when Nazis really like what's Scott Benson and Co's
Night in the Woods.
Night in the Woods, when you just see someone who is like super alt-right, but they have May from Night in the Woods as their avatar on Twitter, and it's like, did you play that game? That game says no to you.
That game doesn't like you, dude.
It's wild. What about you guys? Like, what do you think, or you two? What do you think about? Like, do you do any of that research, or is that just something that comes up as you play something?
Well, this has been something I've actually tackled a little bit this week. And I also played A Hat in Time before I sort of, you know, fully. It's not that I wasn't aware on some level that I remember there was some controversy about the game, but I, you know, got the code and I played it and was delighted by it. And then, you know, sort of the reaction to the piece I wrote was like, oh, hey, JonTron's in this game. And
yeah.
You have that moment of like, well, fuck. And I also clearly had that moment of, oh, fuck, this week when I played the new Life is Strange episode. It's in Before the Storm, I forget exactly, but it's the episode that just came out over the last week. And really loved it and really enjoyed it and had a wonderful time with it. And then kind of had that moment of, oh, fuck, this was definitely made with scab labor. Like, they definitely crossed union lines hire another actress to portray Chloe. And it not only is a shitty thing to do for, you know, actual reason, you know, the real reason it sucks is because they crossed labor lines. It also didn't help the game at all.
Right,
it's not as good of a performance. You know, that's so on every level, it's not a great thing. So I think there's a lot to struggle with there. I also know I'm going to get kicked out of this room any second now. So
let me just shit talk one intro really quick, which came up a lot.
Okay.
Skyrim. Skyrim has a shitty intro. That game is great. That intro is terrible. That's all I got.
All right, that's fair. And we can always obviously continue conversations. You'll see all sorts of amazing stuff that we have on waypoint.vice.com. You should read our website. It's a good thing to do, especially if you like us at all. If you don't, I guess don't. You know, I think you should read it. And of course, you can always send questions to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. And as always, we've got shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine. Austin, where can we find you?
Austin_Walker over on Twitter.
Awesome. Patrick, where can we find you?
Find me @PatrickKlepek.
Fantastic. Of course, you can follow our stuff, Waypoint, on Twitter, Facebook. We are Waypoint Vice. And on YouTube, we are Waypoint Vice. And we are actually putting up a ton of videos. We have Natalie back. She's doing a great job. And I'm very, very happy about it. So thank you all so much for listening to our Friday show. As always, I want you to be good and be good at it.
Peace.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.